Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
I'm Father Dwight Longenecker. I'd like to invite you to join me for a pilgrimage tour to France this September. It's based on my book, St. Benedict and St. Therese, The Little Rule and the Little Way. I'll be teaching about the spiritualities and the lives of these two great saints, and we'll be visiting the great monastery of Fleury, where St. Benedict's relics are venerated, and of course going to Lisieux to visit the childhood home of St. Therese, the Carmel where she was a nun, and the great basilica dedicated to her honor. But there's more than that. At Paris, we'll be visiting the Basilica of Sacré-Cœur, Rue de Bac with the Miraculous Medal, going on to Vézelay, Nevers with St. Bernadette, Paray-le-Monial, where the devotion to the Sacred Heart of Jesus was given to St. Margaret Mary, and then Chartres Cathedral, Mont-Saint-Michel, the Normandy beaches, and more. I think there's not only going to be time for instruction and learning, but also prayer and worship, celebrating Mass in the various locations, and also time for fellowship and a good bit of French food and wine, too. Come and join us this September. If you'd like to know more, go to CatholicHeritageTours.com. That's CatholicHeritageTours.com, or be in touch with me through my website, DwightLongenecker.com.
Fellowship and love.
Welcome to Beneath the Surface here at WCAP Radio. Glad you could join us tonight here at beautiful downtown Lowell. I'm Paul Morano, your host. We have a good show for you tonight, so don't go anywhere. We are doing this from a... I tell you what. Technical issues here. Let me introduce behind the glass, before we get going, Miss Cindy Annis. Cindy, how are you?
Okay, what's wrong?
A little of this and a little of that. How are you doing this week?
Oh, I've been better, but I'm good.
What's wrong, Cindy?
Everything's all right.
It's a long story? Okay. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. Here at Beneath the Surface Radio, 978-454-4980, if you want to get involved in our conversation tonight. Our guest for tonight is Miss Laurie Glasser. Laurie is here to talk about our topic for tonight, which happens to be music and culture. Laurie has seen live in concert everybody who is anybody in the pop music world.
I've even seen you, Paul.
I am somebody, aren't I?
You are.
All right. Over the past few decades. And so let us go beneath the surface with Miss Laurie on the life of the rock star and how their art has influenced culture at large and all kinds of questions like that. Laurie, welcome to Beneath the Surface.
Great to be here. Great to be. Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you. I think, Cindy behind the glass gives you the thumbs up and everything's a go. So, we don't often go beneath the surface on music, on the topic of music, but
right.
Whenever we do, I really enjoy it. As you mentioned, I happen to be a musician myself.
Yes, and a good one.
A singer, songwriter, musician. You, thanks for coming the other night to
so
come,
much fun
to come watch me.
Lots of people, everybody dancing.
Yeah, that was great.
You were a hit. It was great.
how do we get beneath the surface on music? Well, let's first talk about some of your experiences. Now, I had you come on the show because I know that you've been so much part of the pop rock music world of, gosh, the past, what, 30 years?
Oh, my gosh. Has
more?
It been that long? Probably probably more than that. I've always just loved music.
Yes.
And, you know, I think a lot of people love music, but I sort of ate it up, so it sort of became a part of me.
Yeah, it was like your diet, your psychological diet.
It really was.
Yeah.
And it probably was so much my diet to a degree that it... may not have been a very healthy thing.
Really?
At one point in my life. Now, because I'm not a musician. Now, if I were a musician and I were, you know, out there playing and performing and, you know, and sort of making it my life because of a good reason. I think that's totally different.
Making a living out of it.
Making a living out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's step back a little bit. So you're not a musician.
Wannabe. I have a piano.
A musician.
I have
wannabe.
A guitar. I have all the percussion instruments.
But you don't play any of them.
I look at them.
You look at them. Well, that's a good start. You've been looking at them for a few decades now?
Way too long. Way too long.
One of these days, you should probably go from the looking stage and evolve to maybe the touching stage and then the playing stage afterwards.
I did take lessons. I think I lost myself. Yeah.
Yeah, there you are.
All right.
Okay.
I did take lessons.
Yes.
I took, I've helped people in the music industry as well. At a time in my life, get gigs, some pretty good gigs, actually.
Oh, really?
Opening up.
You never helped me.
Well, you didn't ask me when I was laid off from a job. I mean, that's when you need to, nab me.
All right. So who did you help get a gig backing up who?
Okay. So going back, I was I'd been working a really great job, and my job was coming to an end. The entire company was shutting down.
Okay, so this was a regular day job. It wasn't nothing to do with music.
It was a regular, big-time, important day job, and it had nothing to do with music. And then they told us the company was shutting down. So literally, we had to go to work every single day. And I had an office, my own office, and we had zero to do, like nothing to do. But we had to be there.
Yeah.
So can I mention names and things like that?
Why not?
So I have a good friend. Well, now we're not as good friends now. It doesn't, not because anything bad has happened. We just don't see each other or talk to each other as much. But his name is Brian Mace, and that is not to be confused with Brian May from Queen.
Okay.
Brian Mace, M-A-E-S. He's an unbelievably incredible musician.
Local Boston area?
Yes, local.
Okay.
He said a lot of big things, and we'll get to that because that's how I met a lot of the people whom I know.
Okay.
But Brian and I, you know, I was going to see him a lot at the time, and how I got into the music scene is another interesting story, and we'll get to that if you want. But I was helping him with gig booking. At first, I started helping him with his schedule and mailing it out and everything, and he needed the help, and I was there all the time, and he needed the help. And then I started helping him. You know, he's like, well, you know, if you want to help me make a few phone calls because I'm kind of busy. And I'm like, yeah, I have the time. I'm sitting in an office doing nothing. So I started getting him some exposure to media and newspapers and Metronome. And I got an article written on him. I actually did a lot of writing. I know I could do this. I did it all. It was awesome. I had so much fun with it.
So were you acting like a manager or an agent?
Yes. All of it.
All of it. Okay.
Yeah. And in return, he started to give me piano lessons because he's the most incredible musician.
Okay.
And voice lessons. La, 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 la. See, they didn't work.
Yeah.
But
I've heard you sing karaoke.
Yeah.
You're pretty good.
Yeah, I haven't. I haven't sung in a long time.
Yeah.
But anyway, so it was a nice little exchange for what would otherwise be an expensive, thing for me to pursue that dream that I had.
What dream?
Of playing music.
Okay.
And the reason I wanted to play was because I just think it's the greatest thing to walk into a room and sit down and play a piano and have everybody love you. Right?
There is a certain amount of ego that goes with being a musician, a singer. There's no question about it.
Is it ego?
You don't only do it for yourself.
Right, but is it ego? Yeah. Well, that I guess so. Yeah. All right. So ego can have a negative connotation to it, but is it ego or is it just wanting to be loved?
It depends. we could psychologically go beneath the surface on this if you'd like, but I do think a lot of people in the limelight, like comedians and musicians, do seek an acceptance and a love and an admiration that they don't often get in normal everyday life.
Well, I would agree with that, and that's probably if we want to take a left-hand turn right here, that's probably exactly why there's so much crazy, action. Can I say?
Yeah, say anything.
Infidelity and things like that happens in that world because, honestly, you like, I look at somebody like Peter Wolf, who I do know.
You know Peter Wolf of Jay Giles' band.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's do name dropping.
Name dropping
throughout the whole show. Go
all
ahead.
Right. Awesome. Yeah. Because I don't do this in my normal life.
Yes.
But you know, I look at someone like Peter Wolf, who, well, some people might say he may not be the most attractive thing.
Okay. All right.
But you know, I'm like so enamored by him because he's like got such a presence up on the stage.
Okay. So he's
and
got
delivers
a stage presence.
such an incredible performance and engages the audience.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it's a weird thing that is almost undeniable to somebody who may be lost, insecure, seeking love, acceptance, whatever.
Right now, are you talking about groupies that would fall in love with him, or are you talking about people like him on the stage?
Groupies who might
fall in love with him. All right. So would you have considered yourself a groupie?
Well, there is a definition to groupie.
Yeah, let's hear it.
And the answer is no, based on that definition.
What is the normal definition of groupie?
The way I understand it is, I've been called a groupie just because I'm always there.
Yes.
But the definition, as I understand it, of groupie is one who will fall into
Some women that allowed themselves to give their bodies to musicians backstage
right.
or after the performances
Correct.
Or something.
Exactly. Exactly. So for me, I was like, I was just always there loving the music. I just, you know, and I danced and, you know, and it just really made me feel like.
Now tell me something. Yeah. You've been to countless numerous, rock shows.
Sure.
Do all rock musicians have groupies?
Define groupie. What do you mean by that?
Rock and roll looking women that hang around the band before and after and party with them.
It seems, you know, I guess I would say yes, from what I've seen. There's always that group of people who just want to be noticed and fished out from the crowd and called backstage. You know, it depends on the venue, too. If it's a really large, huge venue with a lot of security everywhere, well, you know, you come and you go.
Mm.
You come and you go. The musicians are going to know if you're there, if they know you, and then they'll you know, have already arranged for you to maybe go backstage or something, I imagine. But yeah, I've seen it countless, endless times, and it never surprises me.
Okay.
And it still happens and that surprises me because I've never done that, but I've outgrown even the thought of like now it just like disgusts me.
Right. Okay. So. So then we take a quick little station identification. You're listening to WCAP Beneath the Surface. Laurie Glasser is my guest tonight, and we are delving beneath the surface on music and culture. Now, right now, we're just getting her experiences because she has seen and gone to every concert in creation.
Hmm.
So, tell me some more bands that you've seen live.
Yeah. So I've seen my first concert actually was, and I didn't meet these people or anything, but it was Hall & Oates. That was probably my first show, and I went with my friend Joanne, who I'm still friends with today, and we sat there watching the opening act saying, "Ho hum, when are they going to leave?" And it ended up being Till Tuesday. Like it's funny how some of those, remember Amy Mann,
Till Tuesday. Yes.
And it's funny how some of those old opening bands are now like big stars and became great famous people. It's kind of like when you watch an old movie and you watch the credits going, you know, rolling up, and it's like, and also starring, you know, and they're the 100th name down, and then they've all of a sudden become like the biggest star.
When you see it, you see them in when they were very young, and you say, that guy or that woman looks familiar.
Yeah. So, and then I've seen Sean Cassidy and Andy Gibb and the Bay City Rollers. And anyway, so that, you know, I've seen a lot of, I've seen a lot. I've seen Steely Dan and things like that.
1970s bands till today, right?
Yeah.
That's basically your genre of music?
Yeah, that's it. I mean,
okay.
They don't know, so I'll just tell them too. But, you know, I love the Turtles and I love the Beatles and I love, although the Turtles and Beatles sort of rolled over Beethoven, rolled over into the 70s. So
yes.
So maybe I got familiar with them and the Beach Boys and all of that. So there's a lot of 60s music I love, but it wasn't my niche. It wasn't my forte, I guess.
What is your forte?
70s.
70s music.
There's no doubt.
1970s
there's
music.
There's no doubt about it. 70s.
Tell me more about the now famous musicians that you knew or do know still. And tell me about what the experience was like hanging around with them.
Yeah. So I'll go back to my friend Brian Mace.
Okay.
So Brian was a local musician, and, you know, he was just playing a lot of local gigs, undeniably talented. And he played with this bass player who is probably one of the best in the country. His name is Tim Archibald, who was, by the way, in a band called New Man. And I don't, if real music aficionados will know who New Man was, N-E-W-M-A-N. And Timmy was in that. Timmy started off in the streets of Boston and, you know, playing.
Was it a takeoff of somebody's last name, Newman?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. Okay.
All right, so continue.
What's that? Wait, what's that?
It's some kind of music.
Oh, all right.
Maybe we can just talk over it and ignore
it. It's something I've never heard before. Music. Just kidding. Oh.
Do you know it?
I know it. It's music.
Well, no, but you know it. Do you know the song? Do you know the name of it?
Is it Someday We'll Never...
I don't even know myself.
is it Someday We'll... I think I know it.
Let's
play it back there. Anyway.
Okay, you're listening to Beneath the Surface. We need to take a quick break, but when we get back, I'm going to ask Laurie about who these big name musicians that she knows, what they're like behind the scenes, and all that kind of good stuff. You're listening to Beneath the Surface, our topic tonight, music and culture. I'm Paul Morano. Got to take a break. Be right back. Those drums. Here we go. Cindy's doing a drum solo. Cindy Annis, ladies and gentlemen. Woo! All right, 978-454-4980 is our phone number. 978-454-4980 is the BTS hotline. Give us a call and join in on our conversation.
Yeah, do it.
Do it. Says Laurie, my guest. That's Laurie Glasser. She is a give me a title for this. You are a full-time at least in your heart and mind music what? Aficionado? Is that a good word?
I am definitely not aficionado.
All right, what are you? Give me a word for this.
I'm a music,
because you don't like groupie.
Music goddess. I don't know.
All right.
I don't know.
So before the break, we were talking about some of the big names that you know or that you knew and that you hung out with. Give me some more.
Okay. So Brian played, ended up being, you know, drafted, I guess, by Peter Wolf.
Okay. Peter Wolf of the Jay Giles Band.
Of the Jay Giles Band. And Peter started his own, called the House Party 5. And my friend David, a very, very good friend of mine for many years, was in there, and Timmy and Brian. So I knew them all. I got to know Peter and a lot of the band that way. And I met Jay Giles and those guys too when they got back
Giles
together.
Jay Giles himself is Jay the Giles. Guitarist.
Yeah, he wasn't in that band, but
okay.
But eventually I met him, right? Because that's what happens.
Yes, that's what happens.
So Pete, you know, and lots of shows with Peter. I mean, I've probably seen him, I'm going to say, at least 50 times. I was the girl he always pulled up on stage and danced
with.
Oh,
really?
I was the Love Stinks girl. I got to bring him red roses and, you know.
Oh, gosh.
I know. It's like, so I wasn't that groupie. I was just that they liked, you know, I was
Yeah, they should have done a music video on that, just
you
like
know.
They did with Courtney Cox.
Really. That could have been awesome.
Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, with the handout.
But if I'm not mistaken, the Jay Giles Band was the first one to coin the term Let's Party.
Oh, okay.
In the early 1970s.
Wow.
So
it's a house party. Ain't nothing but a house party.
There you go. Ain't nothing but a house party.
House party. Also Brian and his gang, meaning David and Timmy. It was Brian Mason, the memory, and those were the three, David Stefanelli and Timmy Archibald.
Yeah.
Also played with, ta-da-da-da-da, your theme song.
Oh, Boston?
Played with Brad Delp and Barry Goudreau.
The lead singer who has passed on, and the guitarist.
Yes.
Yes.
And I still know Barry and his wife, Connie, and, you know, I would say more acquaintances, but they know me. They know me by name and whatnot. Their son did my refinancing on my house.
I always thought that Brad Delp had the best rock voice in the history of rock and roll.
Phenomenal.
In my opinion.
Truly phenomenal. Mm. And that man was a humongous Beatles fan.
Yeah, he was. He had the band
Beetlejuice. And honestly, he liked that more than ever wanting to go back to Boston or anything like that.
And it's funny because those are probably my two favorite bands.
Isn't that neat?
The Beatles in Boston.
Yeah. So I met, you can look at my Facebook page when it's up. It's down a lot. Okay. But I have pictures of myself with all these guys. And I'm just going to move on. Yeah. The Cowsills. I've met the Cowsills.
Okay.
Because, let's see, I dated, big mistake. I hope he's not listening.
Big mistake.
Big mistake. I dated somebody who's in the backup band with Brian Wilson, who's the lead singer of the Beach Boys.
Of the
Boys.
Beach Boys,
right.
Yeah.
And actually with the Beach Boys when they did their 50th tour a couple of years ago.
Okay.
I'm sorry, you were dating who? I was dating one of the guys in the band.
Okay. You know any Beach Boys?
So, yes. And I've met I've met Mike Love. I've met Brian Wilson a number of times. I've met Al Jardine a number of times and talked to him many times, and David Lee Marks, and
now all of these Beach Boys are probably in their
Bruce Johnston
around 70 now?
Okay. Yeah, 75.
Wow. Okay.
Like I think Brian just turned 74 or something like that. Yeah. So because I was able to get backstage a lot, and just because
really
so what's, even after right. this guy and I broke up.
Never mind this guy.
Yeah. Let's never mind him.
You're backstage with the Beach Boys after a concert. What's it like? Tell me.
So it's really just really lame and low key. It's not a big deal. First of all, Brian Wilson never comes out. You have to catch him sort of in between acts. He sits in a chair and falls asleep, you know, in between sets and whatnot.
Oh, cool.
And then he leaves right after the show. He doesn't want to talk to anybody. But I was able to meet him, you know.
Okay.
But everybody else is really personable and nice, and you sort of wait for a picture and you talk to them a little bit. But there's always a myriad of people around because there are a lot of people in the band, a lot of people they know, and friends and friends of friends and family.
Okay.
And so, but I will let me just go back to Brad Delp and Barry Goudreau
in Boston. Yeah.
Humble.
Yeah, I met Brad Delp a couple times.
Did
myself.
You at a Beatles?
Extremely humble.
Sweet.
Yeah.
And this poor man had issues, and apparently, you know, on his own, he committed suicide. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Sadly, and we pray for him, right? Mm. I mean, but that's my experience with many of these musicians. I've met a number of times the Smithereens, and I would say I know them. John Ford Coley is very, very open and vocal on Facebook, and we have become acquaintances enough for him to like sort of talk to me by name.
Testing 1, 2.
Yep. So you know, I don't know, I've had a good experience, and I'm sure there were more. I can't think of everybody, but those are the bigger names, I guess.
Is there a commonality of maybe personality type of musicians, of well-known musicians that you can say?
Yeah, they're psycho. They're eccentric.
Okay, all right.
And I don't mean that in a bad way. They just have a very interesting perspective on how they look at things. And I'm not going to say that that's an absolute.
I know, but. Tell me, would you elaborate a little bit, or give me an example or something.
Yeah. Sort of their outlook, because the music, everything is very big and picturesque and artistic and
loud.
Yeah.
So all of life is like that for them. That's their perspective.
But then I know a lot of these guys behind the scenes are really quiet and sort of down. And into themselves, and again, that's not a stereotype, but as I think of the few people I know, who I knew really well, you know, they're really quiet, and they're not big enormous personalities. They get up on stage and they're big, enormous personalities.
So you just mentioned two kinds of musicians. They're very different from each other.
Well, there's the onstage musician and then there's the offstage musician.
Okay.
And clearly what you see on stage has to be what it is because they're performing for the most part. But somebody like Peter Wolf, he walks down the street with his little, always dressed in black, and he'll, you know, barely talks.
Really?
But when you get him talking, he tells a story, and he's an unbelievable storyteller. But you'll get that on stage a lot, too. So, you know, I don't know them all that well, but that's my experience.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
What is the, are there different, have you ever met any musician philosophers?
You. Again. Hello.
Other than myself.
Not sure.
Yeah, it's not all that common, is it?
I don't think that it is at all. No.
Is the music world, and you are, you know, you've been a part of it in your presence for at least three decades.
Yeah.
Is it properly characterized as being hedonistic?
Wow, that's a good question. I don't know how to answer that, Paul.
That's the stereotype.
Yeah, it's definitely a stereotype. I don't look at it so. I don't look at it like that. I don't look at it so negatively. I just kind of
just look at it realistically. I'm not asking you to be positive or negative.
Yeah. I don't know how to answer that.
All right.
Maybe you can answer it for me.
Who are you pointing to?
I'm pointing to the person who I wish was here.
Yes, you did. You did say, "Get me somebody else."
But they're not talking. Yeah.
You are doing awesome as a lone guest tonight. You're doing fantastic.
I'm a solo loner. Story of my life. Anyway.
All right. So then, you probably say, since it doesn't jump out at you, it's probably just a stereotype that doesn't match reality in many cases, right?
What do you think? You answer that.
I don't know. I haven't played out in a band in literally decades.
Yeah.
I play out as a solo act. So.
Yeah.
I just walk in and I go home and I sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, as you should. I worked in radio for a little while and I went, and that was just like sports radio. But my parents had a very big presence in the radio and music industry, and they too met like incredibly famous people like Frank Sinatra and Patti Page and the McGuire sisters, and we'll go back to all and maybe, you know, I get some of it from them.
Have you I know that you're very attracted to musicians because you love that world and you love the charisma that comes from that, and you were just talking about it with Peter Wolf and all of that. For the longest time, you probably were hoping to marry a musician.
So true.
All right. So then, have you...
So wrong.
Have you figured out that, by and large, this probably isn't a good idea? Or are you still holding out that there might be some marrigeable musicians out there?
Like that thing you've been trying to tell me for the past 30 years? Don't do it. Laurie.
Well, is it long?
Oh my gosh.
Are professional musicians properly characterized as not having their feet on the ground and not being able to commit?
It is really unfortunate, and I really hate stereotypes, but it's just going to have to be that way right now, because the truth of the matter is that most musicians just really don't have their feet on the ground. Did you just say that?
Cause that's you like that one?
Yeah, because that's what I would say too. For the most part, let's see, I've dated a number of musicians who are either alcoholics or, you know, addicts in one way or another, just infidelitous, or liked them. I haven't really dated, actually really haven't dated a ton. You know, I've had crushes on them and just really haven't dated. Okay. But I can honestly say I'm glad you brought this up, because the truth of the matter is I just don't even know what I saw in them anymore. I'm like, I look at myself and I'm like, what did I?
Well, you like the whole persona of the long hair and the free,
I know what I like.
are you saying that you might have matured out of that or something like that? What are you saying?
I have spiritually grown out of that. And I don't know, maybe it's a maturity. Is it mature when prayer actually becomes more of who you are? Is that maturity? Or is it just a realization of the truth, thanks be to God, because...
Well, I think when you were younger, you probably were, I mean, not probably, you were religious and spiritual when you were younger.
Always.
Yeah.
Never have not been.
So then, that doesn't necessitate you not looking for a musician.
That's true.
So you were probably hoping that there would be a musician that was also open to commitment and your other religious values that you hold.
Yes.
And so far, I guess it hasn't...
Time to move on.
You haven't found that. but, yeah, I mean, I have noticed that just the rock music world in particular isn't all that conducive to long-term commitments and, settling down, I guess, is the best term.
Yeah.
Settling down.
Yeah, I know a few musicians who have really solid, long-term solo, single marriage, situations.
Yeah.
And this one person I'm thinking of is actually, I went to church with them many, many years ago, their church.
Yeah.
But just to go with them, I wasn't trying anything new or anything. It was just, but it was nice to see that they shared this together. It was a big part of their lives. So ultimately, whatever faith you practice, I just think God really needs to be there.
Okay. After the next break, which is going to be in a few minutes, we will definitely delve beneath the surface on all of this stuff, on culture and music and religion. But right now, let me ask you a question that I've been noticing in the past 5 to 10 years, and that is millennials and, I don't know, people in their 20s and 30s listen to their parents' music. I find this bizarre because when I was that age, you just did not listen to your parents' music. That was old fashioned. That wasn't hip, wasn't cool. I wasn't going to listen to Frank Sinatra and big bands. But what is it? I just went to a wedding and a 22-year-old girl that I know got married. You were at that wedding, and virtually all of that music. Was music that we grew up with.
It was unbelievable.
70s and 80s music.
It was unbelievable. I thought they were doing it to make their crowd happy and it wasn't the case.
We asked them and they said, this is the music we all listen to.
It's amazing.
What is with that? What happened to music? Is there not any new innovation in music that most people like? What's the deal?
Well, there are a lot of people who like today's music. Clearly there are a lot. But I think that parents who really do a good job rearing their children will keep them away to some extent from today's music just because of
why
there's a lot of connotation that's impure,
a lot of sexual innuendo,
and a lot of just swear words and bad words and a lot of violence and we can go back to there's probably a little taste of violence if you look at some of the 60s music and when people were breaking out with Woodstock and stuff like that. But
remember that song DOA? It was called Dead on Arrival.
I know what it stands for, but I don't remember it.
Okay.
Sing it.
No. I can't sing it with this song going on.
I know.
No, this reminds me of 50s music.
Yes. Yes.
Cindy, 50s music? Yeah? Okay.
Yeah.
What's the name of this band? Do 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 do.
Little Caesar and the Critters, I think.
Okay.
I'm just
Critters.
not a 50s fan.
You're not a 50s fan?
No, am I working over here?
Yeah.
I'm not a 50s fan. I don't think I'm working, but...
All right, so when we come back from break, Cindy, I want you to play a 70s song for Laurie. Because that's her wheelhouse, 70s music. You're listening to Beneath the Surface. I'm Paul Morano. Be back right after this. Don't go away.
That's hilarious.
Here it is. It's the 1970s music. Ready for some kung fu?
Everybody was kung fu fighting.
There you go. 978. Fast as lightning they were. 978-454-4980 is our phone number. Thanks for that 70 song, Cindy.
That was good.
You're listening to Beneath the Surface. We're talking about music and culture tonight. My guest, Laurie Glasser. So, Laurie, it's the segment to truly go beneath the surface.
Yeah.
You ready?
I'm ready. I don't know. I'm working. I'm working. Am I working?
You're working. All right. You're working.
Doesn't sound all right. It.
What can or does music communicate that mere words cannot?
Well, music is an expressive language. It tells a story.
So you consider music itself as a language, even music without words.
Oh, most definitely. Oh, yeah. Most definitely.
Tell me about that.
So one of my favorite songs is "Classical Gas" by Mason someone or other.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, it inspires me. It energizes me. It pumps me up. It makes me happy. It gives me emotion. That has to be a language when you encompass all those feelings from a sound.
Something is communicated that affects you that way.
Yeah.
So do you think this is something that is universal, that all human beings, there's something in human nature that responds to music?
Yeah, I mean, it expresses emotion. It talks about that. I mean, think about when there was no written word.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And music sort of was, because of the culture, you had to express yourself somehow. So you had, you know, tribes,
Actually, there is a school of thought, philosophically, that music was the original language for human beings.
Wow.
And everything else evolved out of music. Now, whether that music simply be drums or rhythm is another question. But,
right.
I mean, we do have voices. We have the ability to whistle.
Yeah.
So there's a school of thought that nature itself is one big orchestra, if you listen to it.
Yes, well, no. That's what I was going to say, because, you know, you get feeling, beautiful feeling, you know, when you hear birds sing and ocean breeze and just, you know, yeah.
Do you ever just sit there at night with windows open and listen to the crickets and all of the rest of the insects out there?
As a matter of fact, last night, I wish they would shut up last night.
they were pretty loud.
They were.
Interestingly,
in the nicest of ways.
On the side, my parents, I suppose there's a certain age where you don't hear high frequencies. And so they can't even hear crickets.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. But
if
you're able to hear them, sometimes they're extremely loud. And then there are other insects that sort of pitch in. And there's a frog here or a mosquito there, or a bird there, or a bee there. When you listen to it at night and everything else is quiet, all together, it's like an orchestra.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like nature is music.
It's perfect. It really is. Gee, I wonder who does that. Oh, God.
So is music then, even though we do have verbal languages and many of them throughout the world, would you say that music is still a universal language?
Always. There's no doubt about it.
Okay. So there's something about sounds that make people cry, that make people energized, make people happy. Do you find this mostly with a certain kind of music? Like, certainly classical music is able to do this. You know, you're either marching, or you're jumping up with it, or you're very sad. It moves you in various ways. You are a connoisseur of pop music. Would you say that pop music does that as much?
Yes, most definitely.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'm really answering your question when I answer it this way, but I will say that. So often I hear a song, I'm on my elliptical at night, right? And I listen to the 70s station on my television, and I always try to name that song in, you know, one note. but when it comes on, it immediately, my mind is just brought back to, you know, 1975, let's just say, and sitting on the hill at Marshall Simon's, looking at
middle school
Jimmy Hersey, who I had a crush on, actually 1976.
Yeah, was he in seventh grade or
sixth
grade?
And I, you know, and I'm like, I'm gonna look up, and I know that was 1976, and it was like,
it's amazing how a piece of music can bring you back, and your memory goes exactly there.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a smell. You know when yes. you smell something and you said, I remember that. That reminds me of back yeah. in 1980 when I was...
Yeah, your grandmother's perfume or yeah. whatever it yeah. was. Right, exactly. It's exactly. So I think most definitely that's a no-brainer. Yes.
Would you say that, you know how you're supposed to have two, well, we do have two hemispheres in our brain.
Yeah.
If you're more right-brained, you're more rational. If you're more left-brained, you're more artsy.
Okay, yeah, right.
Would you say that music takes care of the left brain? It takes care of the heart, in a sense.
Absolutely.
Rather than the head.
Unfortunately, yes. You know, you always hear, should I follow my heart or should I follow my head? In fact, yeah. I think that's in an REO Speedwagon song.
it's probably in a dozen songs.
Should I follow my head?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
that was really bad. Anyway, but yes, and again, I say it's unfortunate because we really are moved sometimes to a degree. The person who doesn't have the self-control necessarily could be moved to act in ways that are just...
So music, is, yeah. I think what you're saying is music conjures up the sensual or the passions in people.
Passion, yeah, most definitely.
It conjures up passion.
Yeah, yeah. Whether it's sensual, you know, or whether it's passion, like you just, oh, you want love, you know, you just want to love somebody, and that music just makes you love somebody. Oh, I think I'll just call, you know, if John Smith right now because I love him so much because this music says so.
No, this is
the biggest mistake you can make.
Don't allow music to dictate how you
exactly.
act.
Exactly. Follow your head, people.
Now, with at the beginning of pop music, and I suppose, you know, with me, the Beatles are certainly a place to look at as the beginning of something. So at the beginning of the contemporary rock music age, music was relatively innocent. And it was almost feminine. I mean, the Beatles would, early Beatles and bands like them would sing about, I want to hold your hand, or my emotional bond with you, or just romance, things you'd find in romance novels.
Very simple.
Yeah.
Simple stuff.
Very simple, very innocent, very romantic.
Yeah.
The things that girls would like and would scream over.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And including their long hair, but yeah.
Yes, including the long hair. It seems like being a rock star or a rock musician, the main motive, at least back then, throughout the 60s and 70s, maybe the 80s or maybe not, was to influence women.
Yeah.
To have that screaming Beatles audience.
Yeah, was it emotion that they was it that attention that they wanted? Did they just want to create that ruckus you know, crowd going, ah, you can see it in all the old, you know, film and everything, and the girls just you know, shaking their head left and right and screaming and jumping up and down and crying.
Now they were usually young girls though.
Yes, yes.
That you see in the old films.
Yeah.
They weren't they
Yeah. It's hilarious now when I go to a show and you know, all these 60s and 70s people are making a comeback today, so the people who are rocking it out on stage are Mick Jagger and you know, they're all in their 70s, and Peter Wolf, and they're all in their 70s
they're
now
senior citizens.
Aerosmith.
Yeah.
And the crowd is, some of them are younger because the parents have done a right job, but but there's a lot of 60s and, you know, older people out there. It's really fun to watch, and you know, I still like going and still being the youngest person there.
Is going to you, is going to concerts still fun? Do you still get a thrill out of it?
No, not as much. No. I always wanted to be right up front. Now I'm okay if I just sort of sit in the back and
really,
yeah, and enjoy it. All depending on the show. Of course, I can't hear very well out of my right ear because I've stood next to speakers.
Oh gosh, yeah, that could be a problem. You mentioned that. Music is something that's where was I getting at here, that older bands are making comebacks, and it's countless. So many older bands are making comebacks that used to be popular in the 70s, then they broke up for a few decades, and now they're touring again. I noticed this with lots of art, including movies. They're retakes, they're rehashes of old ideas, the superheroes and the movies 1, 2, 3, and 4 and all the sequels. Do you think that the art world in general, including music, is having a problem with having a dearth of creativity?
I knew you were gonna. Are they running out of things?
Yeah, I mean, are we no longer creative, and why?
So really, this is a real good beneath the surface thing because
it is. We could do a whole show on that question.
Are they running out of things, or are they bringing it back to what was good, and they know it, because it really was what was good. Now, you and I recently had a conversation about, and some other people, about some of the old shows on television that they're bringing back.
Yeah.
Not the Jeopardies, that's always been. The Gong Show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Family
they're doing
Feud
the same. With game shows, yeah.
Game
they're doing
shows,
the same thing.
Right, and Match Game. And
Match Game, yeah.
I hate every single
one of them. Right. The old ones were great.
The old ones were great. Now, why?
Yeah. Well, the difference, to me, it's obvious. The difference is the sexual revolution.
That's it.
Everything is sexual innuendo now, whereas before it was actually a game that used your mind to try to win, and it was very fun.
And it was fun. And there may have been some Richard Dawson kind of cute little, maybe over the line a little bit sexual.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
But I didn't either. But it's worse today. And you didn't think, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't think that today's Family Feud was that bad. I think it is so bad. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I got that wrong. I think it is so bad. Mm. So bad. I think it's one of the worst on television.
So then you think basically...
I hate it.
Culture is going down the gutter.
Gutter.
It's no longer thinking and being creative.
No, they think that the whole sexual stuff is funny because guess what? There is a crowd of people who will, be drawn into that and laugh. Yeah. I change a channel. I hate it.
It's extremely immature.
And I don't actually think it has anything to do with my faith or religion. It probably has a lot to do with it, but I don't know.
Well, it seems like just we have devolved in our intellectual capacities and have become much more of an immature adolescent society.
Right, exactly.
Now, this is happening with television. It's there's no creativity in music, and now the millennials like their parents' music, and old bands are rehashing their acts. What does this say about creativity today? And I guess here's the beneath the surface. Why?
Yeah.
Why are we no longer creative as a people, as a culture?
Right. I honestly wish I could answer this question because I asked you the question, even though I'm supposed to not be asking the question, but that I have wondered all of this time.
Do you think
believe it was the best generation and that they're going back to something that is
why was art so good at a certain point?
Because
if that's
I really think subtly people know the truth, Holly, that all of this crazy in your face sexual stuff really doesn't cut it.
Yeah.
The stuff that was really funny wasn't that.
And really
the
good
stuff
and really
that was really good wasn't that. The stuff that was really enticing wasn't that.
Then why was society so good at being creative at a certain point in our culture and now it's not the case? What happens?
You get lazy over time because something is accepted. And then on that.
But why is something accepted that it wasn't accepted before?
You could go back to the 60s, I guess, and just start with the sexual revolution there and Woodstock and people and all the stuff. And then the 70s and disco. And you know what that era was like in the 80s and the world.
I'm trying to lead you to connect religion and culture, and you're not doing it for me.
Oh, well, you should have written it down and held up a sign.
Because I think this is what you're saying without saying it. The more virtuous, the more religious the people are, the more creative they actually are.
I wasn't trying to say that, but that's true.
There's a correlation there, isn't there?
I would say yes.
Because the mind and heart are not simply stagnated on things of this world,
right,
on pleasure and obsession and addiction. The mind and heart are raised to something transcendent and something greater.
Right, but is it religion? Like, are they religious, the people who are creating all this wonderful creativity stuff? To what level? Or are they just not embedded in the trash of Hollywood
that stagnates the heart and the mind?
Yeah.
I think it's a combination of both. I think in a post-Christian society you're going to get stagnation in art and culture, And it's not getting any better, it seems.
Yeah. Sorry I didn't bite.
No, that was good. Good. You got it. Any last thoughts?
I know the guitarist on this song.
There you go. You personally know.
I do.
Brad Goudreau of Boston. A Peace of Mind. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You've been listening to the Beneath the Surface Hour here at WCAP, 10 to 11 p.m. every Monday nights. My guest, Laurie Glasser, thank you very much. The topic was music and culture. Thank you very much, and back next week with a different topic and a different guest. God bless, everybody.
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.